The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 16th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Charles Bray, chairman of East Anglia Mining and Exploration, provides a trading update and news on a JV which he describes as transformational. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about China, their influence on the commodity prices, market, all that stuff. And also, he thinks the US is coming back. Coming back as in, you know, being more influential than China, even. He talks also about Kodal Minerals, Empire Metals, and Kora Gold. And at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content if you fancy reading some, or even watching some, or listening to some. There's an article there on Westminster Group, two new contracts in a row, I believe, today and yesterday, doing very well off those. Also an interview, like I said, with Paul Hill and CEO of Michelmersh, that's Frank Hanna. There's an article there on Creo Medical Group, their microblate. There's also something on Zephyr Energy and also Traders Cafe with Zach Meir. What's he talk about there? He talks about Dukemont Capital, Humagenics, Cerium, Valerian Blockchain, Westminster Group and Zephyr Energy. And there's also another article there in W Resources. And of course, you can't not check out the COVID-19 index. Check that out every day. Biggest riser today, Tizian Life Sciences, up 8.84%. And biggest faller today is Gene Drive, and that's down close to 6% at 56 pence. You can check that list out, that index out, at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Bray, chairman of East Anglia Mining and Exploration, EM.P, as ticker there. Charles, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, we haven't spoken for a while, and I've seen lots of updates you've done, and sort of, I assume things are going very well here behind the scenes. And like I said, two news bits of news yesterday, JV, and you've done a trading update in the last month or so, so we'll dig into all that. Before we do, Charles, for people who've not heard of you or not quite familiar with you, can you explain what East Anglia Mining and Exploration is all about, please?
Yes, we're a small Aquis-listed company, an investment company that's looking to become a medium to large-sized investment company that focuses on natural mineral resources in Africa. In particular, we have an operation in Rwanda that is focused on tantalum, but as a byproduct, we are now producing niobium and tin primarily. So yeah, that's it. We're looking to become a African natural resources critical minerals company.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so a month ago now, wow, time flies quickly. Announced a trading statement. So let's dig into that. And obviously, since then, what's been happening? Tell us how is progress there, Charles?
Yeah. Well, even prior to that, at the end of in Q4 of last year, we announced that we had completed construction on our wash plant. Mm-hmm. And that's a 20-25 tons per hour wash plant just off the shores of Lake Kivu in Musasa, which is on the western coast of the country. And with that, we were able to take our input material where we're finding tantalum, at least in this one section, a relatively low grade of 200 parts per million. And we were able to upgrade that to about 10% tantalum, which is a saleable product and good. However, we decided that it'd be best to engage some third-party gravity separation engineers and to bring them in to help us to get to what I'd call a more an achievable and a more promising sort of grade around 25 to 30%. Mm-hmm. And so we've brought those engineers in from South Africa. They've been working with us. And we've been commissioning the wash plant to optimize its performance. And we're pretty close there. I'd expect that by the end of August, we'll definitely have that thing running in a way where it should be just running by itself by then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. From a trading perspective, what it's meant is that we've had to delay some of our revenues, which has been a bit costly. However, the upside to that is when they do come online, it will be a multiple of what we were expecting previously.
Okay. Cool. And when do you expect these, to generate revenues there?
Yeah, I think really August is that target period where we should be able to start. I mean, we can start selling product now.
Yeah.
However, the issue is, again, it's moving product one third the grade, paying for the fuel cost and et cetera, especially during COVID, which is still impacting Rwanda, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. In terms of transportation and movement across the country, it just makes more sense to have a product that's three times more valuable to ship it from one place to the other. And we're happy about how that progress is happening. And we're delighted to be working with these engineers.
Yeah. And what about prices of commodities at the moment? What's it like at the moment?
Yeah, it's been very beneficial. That's another reason why the delays actually we feel over the longer term, I guess on a PV basis, hasn't really hurt us because we've seen about a 20% increase in the tantalum price over the past 12 months. And if anything, we expect that over the next 6 to 12 months, we'll see the same again.
Yeah, okay. All right, excellent stuff. And just yesterday, you announced a new joint venture for critical metals in southern Rwanda. Can you explain this, John?
Yeah, we were very fortunate in that there was a significant land holding that was auctioned effectively, licensed by the Rwandan Ministry of Mines. In the south of the country, covering about 5,500 hectares. That was licensed to two parties, one of which we've concluded a joint venture agreement with, and it's transformational. We have now agreed on a 70-30 split, and we'll begin exploration work to prove up this resource. And we're very, I should say, prospective resource. We're very, very excited about this. It has very, in terms of the description of the prospective area, it's basically, it's on the ground. So in terms of overburden, that's absolutely minimal. We're able to begin some drilling. We've done some trench work. We've been on the site. We've brought in independent geologists, and we're very excited about this and happy to have the opportunity to be working with this group and also RMB to develop this area in the south. We truly believe that it's a major new tantalum find in the country.
Yeah. And I said, at what stage, you're bringing geologists in there, but you seem quite confident there. Why are you so confident in this?
The only way to describe it is that when you see this site, there's a ridge line that effectively is the pegmatite. Now we're not sure how far off the ridge line the pegmatite extends. Mm-hmm. But we're able to, and we've been able to demonstrate this with some independent laboratories, that the actual pegmatite does it extrude and is just visible, and it's significant. So the question now is, how far does it extend? Are there various arms off of that particular pegmatite? And to what extent is this a resource, and can we quantify that? And it's very important, obviously, for the government to understand what's there. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking forward to beginning some drilling work and doing some real resource work so that we can assist the government in understanding what this deposit is like. And ultimately, our aim is to change the exploration license to operating production license, which in Rwanda is something that is quite feasible.
Yeah. Okay. And just give us a timeline on operations here. What do you hope to achieve, and by when?
It's absolutely our intent to begin exploration work in Q3, mm-hmm. and to hopefully announce, ideally in Q3, but definitely in Q4, some of those results. Ultimately, we want to begin production if the results demonstrate that it's viable in 2022. So we believe that that's a very achievable timetable, mm-hmm. and it's one where we can execute in terms of beginning construction on the wash plant, establishing exactly where we're going to begin the production work, and having all the plans submitted and the approvals granted, hopefully by the end of 2022.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? We've almost lost 2020. And I was thinking 2022 seems way off. And I'm thinking, hang on, it's like, we're only 6 months away from 2022. Yeah. So we're just closer than we think. Marvelous stuff. Okay, well, John, as always, give us three quick reasons. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, give us three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add East Dingo Mining Exploration to their watch list, please.
Yes, we are an exploration company, and we're demonstrating that we're able to acquire exploration assets that are, and we plan on proving this up, that are quite valuable and can be turned into producing assets. Number two, we are a small production company, and that expertise is that we've gained over the past 6 to 12 months has been invaluable in terms of understanding the metallurgical work that needs to go into a wash plant, actually assembling the wash plant, obtaining the technical expertise to execute on that. It's very valuable. That's number two. Number three, we're looking to expand. We're looking to expand not only with respect to geography, but also with respect to underlying minerals, so that we can become that critical strategic mineral company that people need in their portfolio, where they get exposure to very valuable assets over the long term. And number four, we feel that fundamentally the market right now for these particular strategic minerals is ripe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Charles, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Great to speak to you. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, good. Thank you.
It's been nice hot weather. It's starting to get a bit like summerish now, isn't it? And I've noticed with my stocks, they've had a bit of a consolidation. Some of them have pulled back. You know, it's been a bit of a boring start to June for me. And they say sell in May, go away. I'm never going to sell a good investment, but it was one of the things about the stock market. I'm reading this book, and the second time I've read this book, it's called 100 Baggers, How to Find Them. It's a study of these companies that have gone from, obviously, you return $100 for every dollar you've invested. And essentially, the theme is, if you buy a good business, at a good price, hold it. And that's all you have to do. And it's very hard for investors to do that. And doing nothing is very hard for humans because, as you know, we've got, our neurons are filling, billions of sort of synapses and things going on in our brains every second. And we have to do stuff. And so trading in and out a lot of the time is a false economy. And the people who have had these 100 baggers just sat on them for years. Of course, you get some wrong, but all you need is one of them, and that's it. And and times like this in the market, when it is required, it's like it's tempted to mess around, fiddle with your portfolio because you're bored. And boredom is not a good reason. That's not an investment reason, So, you hold some stocks. What's yours been like of late?
Well, I like the idea of locking in profits from time to time. And I think, the market changes what it's looking for. I mean, you can never fight the market. But if you see that there's an investment trend in a certain area, I think you should be looking to be proactive and follow it. So, yes, it's a lovely idea to just sit on an investment for years and years and years. And in many respects, that patience is often rewarded. But I do think that investors should look to move into things that are getting that are more interesting, and move out of stuff that's got dull and stayed. Yeah. Frankly,
no. Well, do you know what?
That are not going anywhere. Why hold a company that doesn't appear to be going anywhere, when actually you can jump in on stuff where management are more proactive and working harder to improve the value of the stock?
No, I agree. And to say that this is an extreme book, and they're saying the average for 100 bagger is 26 years. So it's a long hold, but literally, you know, 100 bags would make you quite well off, depending on what you put in. But there is that way up between, sometimes we think about, you know, chopping and changing for no reason, but boredom should never be a reason. That's not, and there's a saying in the book, I forgot what it says, don't make an investment decision based on not an investment reason, you know. So boredom, because the share price goes sideways for a while. If the business is up, that's the trouble. We look at share prices too much. The share price is not the business. And it's different with resource companies, for example, if they're explorers, because they're not really doing any revenue. I mean, they're talking more mature companies. So start off small, but they're starting to, their sales are starting to grow. And that's one of the things. If the sales are growing in a company and some of the metrics are improving, essentially the business is improving. Don't worry too much about the share price, as long as the business is improving. And that's it. Trouble is, people sell because the share price is moving the wrong way, not moving the right way, and they lose patience, but the business is improving, like I said, because it's listed. And I often say this, sometimes shares are too liquid, we can easily cash in because we get bored. And sometimes I've done it several times, and I've gone into themes that are very strong, and I've done videos on companies, and they've gone nuts, absolutely nuts, after I've sold, because I got bored with them. I thought, oh, I just held on for a bit, you know. So yeah, just don't make an investment decision when it's not an investment reason to sell, you know. So that's it. I mean, if something's still improving. In fact, let's talk about we'll talk about some companies in a bit. But you know, they've been around for a while. Some of the companies I mentioned today, Codal, for example, been around for a while, and people could forgive jumping in and out of that. It is a resource company, of course, so it's a different kind of animal. But the theme under that company is very strong, isn't it? When you've got strong themes, then it's a reason to stay in. And I've jumped out sometimes. Strong themes. Share price hasn't gone in the right direction. The business has been improving, you know, operationally underneath, but I've got bored and jumped out, and I've missed out massively on doing that. Let's talk about what moves these themes. You want to talk about China, and I said to you, China, they are the biggest influence, aren't they, on commodities in the world, China. When it comes down to countries alone, it's China, isn't it?
Yes, and I think the big macro theme to follow here is there's lots of new battery manufacturing facilities being planned. Just about everybody who's making batteries is expanding their production rate, and the situation is that the world is going to need more lithium, more graphite, more nickel, more cobalt, more manganese, more of the materials that go into those batteries. Yeah. And Ganfeng, which is the largest of the lithium processing companies in China, has just raised a pile of cash in the US. And is busy running around the world buying up lithium production or buying up future lithium production. So it's done a deal with Firefinch out of Australia. They used to be called Mali Lithium. In fact, many years ago, I think it was called Baguni. But so Ganfeng are offering $130 million for a 50-50 joint venture in the Galima lithium project in Mali. Now this is very interesting, because that 130 million effectively says the project's going to get built. There's a $91 million of that is contingent on a final investment decision. I'm not quite sure when they'll make that, but to have put in the first $39 million, they're pretty sure that they're going to make that decision to actually build the project. So that's very exciting news. So it says that this project was right at the top of Ganfeng's shopping list. I mean, they've also offered to buy Bacanora in Mexico. I think they will rue that decision one of these days, because I think that's a clay deposit and they're quite complicated. But if they want to put their money into it, that's their decision. But the exciting thing is that Codal Minerals, which is bang next door to the Galima project, it increases the chance that Codal's partners there, and they've got the Chinese Sinohydro company running due diligence on that project at the moment. We think that makes it all the more likely that Sinohydro are going to do a deal with Kodal for the development of the Bougouni project. So very exciting stuff. I went into the market to buy Kodal mineral shares yesterday. I just think that's, you know, the probability is on the side of the Kodal shareholders right now.
Yeah, and do you think that, you know, when you see China, like there's big companies, especially from China, trying to, you know, guarantee some supply here, and it'll spur on other companies, you know, who need to realise, hang on a sec, China seems to be snapping up all available lithium supply. Do you think, you know, that will spur other companies to get them doing the same kind of thing, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the interesting thing is, although there's, the geologists will tell you there's lots of lithium in the world, there seems to be only a certain number of lithium projects, we call spodumene projects, which is hard rock lithium, which are of suitable grade and suitable metallurgical quality for processing. Now, Kodal has the benefit of a company called Suechin, and Suechin are associated with a Chinese lithium processor. It's not Ganfeng in this case, it's a different company. And those guys have been backing Kodal for the last couple of years in order to ensure that, well, in order to advance the development of the Bougouni project, so that they're in pole position for the offtake of that project in future years. So that's why they've brought in Power China, which owns Sinohydro. Sinohydro have been working in Mali for some years, building guess what, hydroelectric projects. And so we just think the chance of that going ahead is very much greater than it was now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you mentioned there, I said, you know, China is the most influential. And before we came on, we started talking about that. You said, well, that may change a little bit. Why do you see that changing? Because just out of the size of their population and where they are in their development means surely they need or become or are going to remain the most influential as far as commodities are concerned.
Yeah, they are. Well, because they do so much smelting and processing. And of course, they've turned themselves into the factory of the world. And I know the US is addressing that issue as we speak, but about half of the world's commodity supply goes into China, and a certain amount of that comes out as, you know, in various manufactured products that we consume in the West. Yes, I think there'll be a change because I think the US stimulus projects and stimulus drive and the reshoring of manufacturing back into the US is going to draw production away from China, but is also going to stimulate further demand in the United States. So I think the US will start to take over from China again in future years, but it will take years, as I suggest. And I think China is still going to be a major, major force, and we've got to be very cognizant of growth rates and consumption rates in China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not comfortable with China at all. But, let's talk about some other companies. You mentioned some news on Empire Metals, EEE. What's happening there?
Yes, Empire Metals. They've got a new project they acquired recently under the new CEO, the Central Menzies Gold Project. And they started exploration on that pretty quickly, so not letting the grass grow under their feet. And they put out some historical drill results, so 5 meters at 20 grams a ton of gold, 3 meters at 5, so 1 meter at 14 grams a ton. So nice results on that, and we can see why they're looking to explore it. So it's only got a market cap of £9 million. I think this is something that could re-rate over the next 6 months.
Yeah. Okay. And Kora Gold had some news on grades and drilling at Sanankora. What's the deal here?
Yeah, it's quite a nice project. Slightly lower grade, but it's in Mali, which is a good place for mining, as we know. 29 meters, so drill results here, 29 meters, 3 grams a ton, 32 meters at 1.6. Those are all mineable. This will be an open cast deposit. I think somebody will make some money out of this. Hummingbird Resources sold a 9.5% interest in the company very recently, but they've been using raising cash to pay down debt. They've had a few issues at Hummingbird in recent years to deal with, so I quite like this Kora project. Looking quite sensible.
Yeah. Gold. What's your thoughts on gold, John? John, I haven't looked at the gold share price for a while. Anything happening there? Anything exciting? Let's have a look.
Well, with gold prices are 1860 at the moment. Investors have generally been buying into gold, mainly gold ETFs, as they do these days. Interesting change on the Basel III. Well, the Basel III directives coming out of Switzerland, which controls how banks manage their assets. And so if a bank is using gold as a baseline asset for lending, it now has to know where that gold physically is. That gold has to be physically allocated in a vault. It can't just say, oh, it'll hold some gold somewhere. It has to hold. It has to know which gold bars it holds in which vault. And so that's interesting. That may mean that the banks have to buy more gold in some cases, because it may be that some of the, shall we say, the cheekier banks around the world maybe a little bit short of some of the physical gold that they claim to have. So this is just the guys who control or regulate banks saying that they want to tighten everything up a bit.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm looking at the chart of gold, right? If you bought every time it dipped, something called the 200-day moving average. That's basically the price smoothed out over 200 days, and this gives an average of that, of course, and it replaced itself every day and adjusts every day, of course. And if you just bought every time, since 2018 here I'm looking at, if it dropped 5% below the 200-day moving average, in fact, it was at, the 200-day moving average was at 1,308, and the gold price went down to 1,185, and it's gone up above that then a few months later, and it went up above that for ages, then from 2018, December 2018, is above it. It dipped once in the dash for cash crash, but not 5% below it, just dash, and then just recently, it's done that again. I think every time you've done that, it dips 5% below that. And if you buy some gold or gold, you do very, very well over the long term, you know. It doesn't do very often. But we'll see now. It's having an issue, isn't it? So it's rolled over. It hit 2,000, of course, near 2,100 back in August. And then it had several, lower highs. In November, it rallied again, not as high. It rallied again in January, not as high. And now it rallied again in 1950. So it's stumbling, it's consolidating here a bit, isn't it? It's interesting to see where it's going here, whether it's going to go lower or sideways for a while. It's interesting. I don't know, I thought it rallied from here, but it's had a decent rally from the lows of March, though. It went from 1695 up to 1900. So, no doubt it's going to be, it's slower than Bitcoin, of course, but it'll grind higher, won't it? Surely.
Gold is an enduring asset class. It's been a major asset for thousands of years. Every time a government splurges out and prints a lot of new money, the gold price goes up. If you see an inflation trend, gold prices tend to follow that. Some people look at various ratios, gold-silver ratio, gold-oil ratios, things like that. But at the end of the day, the more cash that's printed in the world, the more value seems to get attributed to gold. And the companies that mine gold tend to follow that. One way or another, because their margins are hugely affected. So it's, as you say, buying the dips seems to be a very good idea as on a longer term trend basis.
Yeah. What commodities do you have exposure to in regards to stocks? What do you have?
I'm in copper, lithium, tin with Cornish Metals, ilmenite with Blue Jay. Oil. I've still got some oil and gas because I think as the world recovers, there'll be the oil market will bounce back. And much as I'm a huge fan of electric vehicles, and I really think that's the way the world has to go, but I think it's not over for oil and gas at the moment. I mean, I'm keen to decarbonize more my portfolio, but I'm also keen to enjoy some of the run in oil and gas over the next year or so. Yeah, so it's I've got copper and gold with Rambler Metals. That's where I am.
I like the phrase decarbonizing my portfolio. I like that, John. Because that's the theme, isn't it? That's a big theme, you know.
That's a major theme. So I'm keen to own battery metals. I'll probably buy into the rare earth metals at some point. I'd like to buy into a decent nickel company, but we've got to go and find one. I don't think there is anything that's particularly suitable on AIM at the moment.
What about Horizonte, HZM?
As I said, I wasn't sure there was anything particularly suitable.
Hey, controversial. All right, do you know what I want to ask you next week, John? And think about this, okay? I'll give you a bit of time to think about this. Why is mining, environmentally acceptable as an ESG, but yet drilling for oil and gas maybe not so much, but oil not? Because I'll ask you a wider question next week, because the people question this is like, there's still questionable practices around the world as far as mining is concerned, but yet it seems to be, because we need it now to get to electrified cars, it seems okay compared to other kinds of drilling, So let's quick talk about that next week, yeah?
Sure, but what I'll say now is I spent many years traveling around the world looking at mining companies and the good work they do in the communities, especially in remote rural areas, is fantastic. I mean, I've seen communities massively uplifted by out of poverty and desperation by the opening of mines in those areas. And I think the management of these mining companies work really, really hard to ensure that the locals get a fair deal and do well out of the development they create.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And particularly listed companies, they're much more conscious of ESG. Whereas if you go and see a private companies don't seem to be so bothered, and if you look at companies run by communist states they really don't seem to care, which gives us huge support for the listed company model, in that those companies are so much more
transparent
beneficial to local communities.
Marvel stuff, John. Speaky next to weeky.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. It's always an important list. It's worth checking out to see, what people are following. If there's a company on this list for many days in a row and the share price hasn't moved, it's worth researching, okay, top five. At five, Access Intelligence. I never heard of that company. I'll check that out. ACC is ticker there. It's down 1.5% to 126. At four, Helium One, down close to 5% at 20 pence. At three, Mosman Oil and Gas, non-mover, 0.18. At two, Westminster Group, up 7% pretty much to 6.2. Had a crack in rise yesterday as well. And at one, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, down 4.3% to 2.4 pence. Okay, it's time. The top five most read RNSs, they are as follows. At five, Ridgecrest Holdings and Company. At four, Hurricane Energy, Lancaster Field Update. At three, also update on Lincoln 14 well plug and abandonment. At two, Westminster Group, 10-year managed services contract, Liberia. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, notice of results. And they're going to be presented on Tuesday, the 30th of July. That's for the year ended the 31st of March. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.